Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for joining me on this second episode for today of the show about the show. As always, every episode of the show is dedicated to the memory of my dad, who taught me to love the game of baseball. Very excited about my guest today. I have former major league pitcher and coach in the Twins system, Eric Rasmussen, on. He has coached a number of very successful major leaguers, and we will also talk about the sports clinic that he runs for children, which is a really, really cool thing that he does. And we're also going to talk about the distinction that he holds. So without any further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Eric Rasmussen. How you doing today, Eric?
I'm doing just fine, Devin.
Good. So you were drafted originally by the Boston Red Sox in the fourth round of the 1971 draft, but you opted to go to the University in New Orleans, where you were an All-American. And then you were drafted in the 32nd round by the Cardinals 2 years later. Can you talk about that decision to pass up signing with the Red Sox and decide to go to college?
Well, I was involved at Indian Hills Community College in Centerville, Iowa. And when that draft came, that was a January draft back in those days because there were two drafts a year. And that's why I didn't offer me much money at all. And I liked the coach there, so I stayed at Indian Hills. And I went to New Orleans then for 1 year, my junior year, and got drafted by the Cardinals. So, I don't know, it was just didn't seem like it was enough money they offered me, and heck, I ended up getting less anyway when I did sign. It ended up just fine.
You ended up getting drafted. Was there anybody else in your draft class that the Cardinals drafted in 1973 that made it to the majors that people might know about?
The guy that got drafted along with me that really made the most of a career was Mike Crowley, a relief pitcher he's from Long Island.
Yeah.
He played with the Cubs, but I think he did his best work, I believe, with the Cubbies. So Mike was one of those guys. Wasn't a big draft. John Camargo is another guy that played with the Cardinals, and I think Expos, Mets. He played around a little bit. Catcher was a good player. It wasn't a big whoop-de-doo draft there.
Okay. You moved through the Cardinals system pretty rapidly. You reached AAA in just your second full season in 1975. You were called up to the majors in July. And talk to me about your major league debut.
Well, that was in San Diego. Kind of cool. My folks flew out from Wisconsin to see that, so that was good. And just one of those deals where, I think it's an easy advantage for a pitcher. First time out, no one knows you. And nobody on my team knew me, by God. And just went out there and pitched pretty good and shut them out. And got a hit and got an RBI. It was a pretty good night. Got on the radio show with Jack Buck afterwards, and my dad did too. He asked me what do you get for that? I said, I think I get $50, Dad. He says, what do I get? I said, nothing. I'll buy you dinner. That was nice.
Absolutely. And you did pretty well, too. I mean, you pitched a 7-hit shutout. You walk one. You struck out 7 guys in your debut. And like you said, too, you also got your first major league hit and drove in an RBI. You wound up starting 13 games for the Cardinals that year. You went 5-5 with a 3.78 ERA. What was your rookie season like for you, just kind of being a guy who just broken into the big leagues?
Well, it was interesting because when I got to the team there, I believe we were 12 or 13 games out. And, by the 1st of September, I think we were like a game out. So we got into a pennant race, but then the Pirates Pirates, if I'm not mistaken, got real hot and kind of ran away with it. But we made it a race that was really fun and got to pitch in some good games. Got to pitch a game in Cincinnati against those guys. Kind of full house thing in a day game. And I think I won 7 2/3, and they took me out of there. In fact, I know I punched out. I know I had Johnny Bench struck out with two outs in that eighth inning. Two pitches, and I asked Ted after the game, I said, Teddy, where were those pitches, 0-2 and 1-2? And he says, oh, right there, both strikes. I said, well, what's going on? He says, what, are you stupid? That's Bench. You won't get that pitch on him for another 3 years. So those are kind of goofy things to remember, you know.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, being a Hall of Famer, yeah, he's going to get that call. So, you know, after splitting the 1976 season between the bullpen and the starting rotation, you had statistically anyway your best season in 1977. You had a career best 3.48 ERA. You pitched 233 innings, and you had 11 complete games. You guys finished in third place that year. When you look at the game today, you know, kind of being a former pitcher and pitching coach, can you talk about how the game was different back then? I mean, Burt Blyleven, he always said, you know, back when I played, we were signed to go nine innings, and that's what they expected. Is that kind of how it was when you played too? You kind of expected to go nine innings?
Well, you know, I guess when we all grew up, we were all trying to go the whole game every, you know, from Little League on, you know, so it wasn't, sure. It wasn't just when you, that's just the way it was. And I don't know, you were geared that way. It was certainly more mental than physical. I mean, physically, it's not that big a deal to go nine. It's mentally, you have to put it into your mind and here I'm going to go nine. And if I can't, I can't, but it was more of a mindset and you got to win. You know, if you want to get 5-plus innings, it wasn't too good. You weren't too proud.
Sure.
You know? Go ahead.
I was going to say, what do you remember about, you know, after you left the Cardinals, you signed with, you got traded to the Padres, I'm sorry, for George Hendrick. What do you remember about the years you had with the Padres?
Oh, it was kind of a funny thing. You know, I had success the first year I was there. Gosh, I think I got there, I was like 2-5 and lost the first couple of games. I'm sitting there 2-7 and I'm not too happy with life. And you know, that was in, you know, June. By June I was 2-7 and the first of September I was 14-10. So I got on a really good roll, and the team was playing well and had a good time. In September, we just, they couldn't score any runs and ended up having a year. I should have had a really good year there as far as record goes, but that was okay. And, you know, I played with some guys that were pretty cool, you know, I had some good friends there and we had a good time. The next year was good. I liked Roger Craig as a manager. That was,
sure.
He was a good man. And I think that he was the reason I got traded there. He liked the idea of going, having complete games. So.
Was Ozzie Smith still a member of the Padres when you were there? Or?
Yes. Ozzie, when I got traded there, Ozzie was a rookie. So he was just getting going. And, you know, he played short behind me most times, and heck, that was a done deal. You get the ball hit that way, it's an out. So he could really pick it from day one. Couldn't hit at all at that point, but you know, he learned to hit later on.
Absolutely, and you know, he had a Hall of Fame career because of it. Following the 1980 season, you got released by the Padres. That winter, you pitched in the Mexican League, and you spent all of 81 and 82 with Leones de Yucatan. Can you talk about pitching in the Mexican League and just kind of how different the culture is in Mexico compared to? Yeah, go ahead.
It was quite a deal there. It was completely different. I mean, first off, it's a complete shocker when you spend 6 years in the major leagues and all of a sudden you get, you know, pretty much put in exile. So that was completely different right away. As far as the part of pitching down there, the toughest part is just the conditions. It's kind of place where there was basically no bullpens. So, you know, you go warm up and find a spot out in the outfield that might have a little hump in it and kind of walk it off and,
sure,
you know, get loose for the game. That was in most every park. There's only a couple of bullpen mounds, actually. As far as the pitching goes, the Mexican players at that time, it was like facing a lineup of a lot of number two hitters that put the ball in play, good breaking ball hitters, really didn't hit the fastball much. And when you start figuring that out, I threw a lot of fastballs and pitched inside a lot.
Sure.
The travel was really tough. Some of the hotels, it was, we had a saying, the worse it gets, better it is, because you'll never forget it. You know, we stayed in some hotels that were absolutely incredible, you know, just like almost like a prison cell type thing. And,
sure.
And, you know, but there were a lot of Americans on the team, and, you know, you sure did. You saw some places you'd never go in on vacation, let's put it that way. And it was quite an education, and it was very interesting. You know, you get up in the mornings, and I did a lot of exploring, you know, a lot of walking around, go to the Mercados and just,
yep,
kind of sightsee and walk around and see the different places. And, you know, it really, if it wasn't that I wanted to be in the major leagues, and I should have been in the major leagues, I would have been extremely enjoyable in a lot of ways. Because you did learn a different part of the world, I'll tell you.
Absolutely. So let's fast forward a little bit. 1983, you get sold to the Royals. 1983, you end up pitching a shutout you end up pitching a shutout against the Boston Red Sox. And by pitching that shutout, you earned the distinction of being the only major league pitcher ever to throw a shutout in both your National League and American League debut. What do you remember about that game against the Red Sox?
Well, it was in, you know, it was in Kansas City, which is good. Better than pitching at Fenway. And,
right.
Just walked in there and just pitched, and, you know, a couple balls hit hard to get caught, and
sure,
before you know it, nine innings is up and had a shutout. I just it went by fast. I don't know, there weren't many pitches thrown. I think I gave up seven hits, and it was like almost a mirror image of my first game. I think it was 4-0 the same way as the first one. I think they both were seven hits, something like that. So, I don't know. Just basically I had two really good nights. I don't know. But it went fine. And actually, there was another guy that did that, a guy named Bob Spade.
Okay.
I've been told. Did the same thing in 1907 and 1910. So I'm actually the second.
Okay.
And in fact, right after that, I saw the San Diego Chicken somewhere, Ted Gianola somewhere on the road. And he says, "Hey, I see you set a record." And I said, "No, I tied the record." He says, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Some guy did it in 1907 and 1910. He says, "Ah, shit, he's dead. You're the only one." God, that was funny. But, you know, the chicken.
Sure, absolutely.
So, yeah, that was a good memory and a good night.
You had you had 10 career RBIs, and you had, interesting little tidbit, is you had a 2 RBI game against the reigning Cy Young winner, Randy Jones of the Padres, in 1977.
Oh, well, yeah. I managed to, I don't know, let's say hit one of those soft sinkers that he throws.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I'd get a hit now and then. You know, you get a hit here and there and do that.
Absolutely. So you know, after your playing career was over, did you know that you kind of wanted to become a pitching coach? Was coaching kind of always something that you had an interest in the back of your mind, or was it just kind of something where you felt like it was the right thing at the right time?
You know what, when I played, especially when I was in the major leagues, I never gave two thoughts to being a coach at all. You know, and it's kind of funny, you know, in the big leagues, it's kind of like all you think about. It's just you're a player.
Sure.
And then, you know, life takes you different directions. And my big league career didn't last nearly as long as planned. And, you know, you end up playing, and the longer you play, then it starts becoming something that you think about. Especially when you're in AAA a lot, and you know you talk and you watch, and then you're thinking, geez, I don't want to do this much longer. You know, what am I going to do? And you get to the point that I've had enough. They're not ever going to let me back in the big leagues. And then it kind of hits you, and then you get offered a job, and then you just kind of go. And I guess you get in the comfort zone with baseball, and you don't want to leave.
So it's kind of a way for you to stay close to the game, despite not being able to play.
Yeah, you know what, it's just you're so used to being on a team and going to a baseball park, and it's a tough thing to give up. You know, it's a tough thing, and let's face it, the real world is not that easy. You know,
sure,
the real world is. You know, to find a regular kind of job, and most ball players, you know, don't react well to the 9-to-5 existence, you know.
Sure.
So it just kind of fit, and I just kept doing it, you know, forever until this past fall. So I guess you call me a lifer.
Absolutely. I'm a diehard Twins fan. I've been a Twins fan my entire life. You picked a good season to join the Minnesota Twins organization. You joined the Twins in 1991. From 91 through 95, you were the pitching coach for the GCL Twins, their rookie level. In 96 and 97, you were the Twins advanced A-plus. Fort Myers Miracle in 98, you jumped to Double A, New Britain, and then in 99, you came back to the Miracle. But in 2008, you were promoted to minor league pitching coordinator. Can you talk about some of the players, maybe like a Brad Radke or somebody like that, who came through the Twins minor league system that you really kind of coached and you saw really succeed in the major leagues?
Well, there's you know, there's been quite a few that go by. And, you know, when I was in rookie ball there, the very first year, that was Radke's. Radke signed and LaTroy Hawkins signed in that same draft.
Yep.
So I worked with those guys, you know, just the rest of that summer, you know, just June, July, August.
Yep.
And then they went along on their own way. And both had really, really good careers. Radke was a real quiet kid, called him the silent assassin. Real good competitor and control pitcher, and went about his business in a real good way, and everybody loved him. You know, he was a no-nonsense guy and just a very simple plan, and he carried it out and over and over and over. And LaTroy was a guy who was blessed with some kind of arm. You know, just he could still probably pitch if he wanted to. He's got just this tremendous, you know, natural physical ability to throw that baseball, and had a great, great career for so many teams. He knows everybody on the planet, I swear. And
he does.
And I'll tell you
what,
LaTroy, what's really impressive with LaTroy, and one of the cool things is that LaTroy, he might show up on a little league field in Cape Coral in spring training just to go see somebody play that he got to know the people when he lived here and played here. And that's the kind of guy he is. He's really good with kids, and can't say enough good things about LaTroy. I knew, you know, I actually know him much better than Brad.
Yeah, and you coached a couple other, you know, just a few other guys that you coached. You didn't. You told me before we jumped on the podcast here that you didn't have too much to do with Johan Santana, but you had a hand with Matt Garvey and Mark Redman and guys like that. Can you kind of talk about guys like that, especially maybe Santana and Garza? I mean, Garza especially had a pretty nice career in the major leagues.
Yeah, Johan, we got him in a Rule 5, and he had come out of low A ball, Midwest League. And Jose Marzan, who's still in the organization, was a manager in the Midwest League, and he's the one that recommended him so highly. So we took Johan and went to the big leagues and, you know, worked out of the bullpen and got going. So I never really had much to do with him at all. I mean, I know him. I know him to say hello. And he's a really good guy. He lives down here in the same area that I do in Florida. Great guy. And, of course, we all know he's a fine pitcher. I mean, you can throw names at me, and I can tell you a little bit about him.
Sure.
Let's see, who else?
Matt Garza.
Matt Garza, I would say that I gave him the highest grades of any pitcher that I ever had go through here. He pitched for me in
really?
Fort Myers, Miracle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gave him the highest grades because he was he had all electric pitches and could throw them all where he wanted to, and you just couldn't hit him. That one year, he pitched for me in Fort Myers, did great. Went to Double-A, did better. Went to Triple-A, did better there, and went to the big leagues. He hit every spot in one year. He went right through there. And
sure.
I expected him to be a major star, but, you know, for whatever reason, it never really happened. I don't think he ever realized his potential. He's got some kind of electric stuff, that kid. He had some kind of stuff in command. So he was the highest rated pitcher, and him and Liriano, Francisco,
okay.
And we got him from the Giants. He pitched for me in Fort Myers, and electric stuff. And he could, you know, what's the funny thing is when you see control problems, that guy, to me, could throw a strike anytime he wanted to, and we got him.
Yeah.
He'd go 2-0 and throw a strike. I mean, he'd percolate. And that radar gun, which I hate the gun, but just for reference, he'd say 93, 94, and then he'd get the two strikes and say 97. So he knew when to put somebody away, and he knew that right away. And
sure.
He was a high stuff guy. He had stuff. Those two are the guys with the best stuff. The best stuff
now,
as starting pitchers.
Now you had a big league career, obviously, as a player, and you've coached a lot of players in the minor leagues. Is Johan Santana's changeup in his prime the most devastating pitch you've ever seen? Is it the best pitch you've ever seen? Because I mean, that thing is that thing was unhittable when he threw that changeup.
Well, yeah, because he had the circle change, which is the top of the line, if you can command it, and there's only been a few guys that actually can do it that good.
Yep.
But you know what? I didn't see him up close as a pitcher.
Sure.
But I know that that's a, you know, when they, if you grade a pitch, eight being the highest, it's an eight. You know, one of the few. So that's, that's a high-ranking pitch. Liriano's slider would be a high-ranking pitch. Through the years. I'm trying to think. I mean, the guys that I've coached, you know, you look at Radke, his stuff was very basic, but it was pinpoint type control. I bet if you checked on the spin rate business, he had high spin rate because he'd throw that invisible fastball right down Central Ave and they'd swing through it. So there's, that's a spin rate issue there. Most likely he had good spin.
Sure.
You'd have to throw names at me. I'm more up on the current guys the current guys.
Sure.
You've seen Fernando Romero now. Everybody's watching him, and he's had a pretty good go of it. He's got good stuff, but what he's got going for him that's exciting is frame of mind. And when you watch
his
him
makeup,
he just doesn't
seem to get battered.
That's right. He's determined. He's determined. Yep. Somebody asked, I saw some interview and they asked him about something about him coming up there. And he says, I have no time to waste. And that's him. That's a kid that couldn't speak any English at all and came back after one winter at home. And all of a sudden he's talking to you like he's a guy down the street. And what he needs to learn, he learns. And, there's a guy I can't talk good enough about, because when I watched him in his first big league game on TV and he started shaking his head the first batter. He wanted to throw what he wanted to throw, and he did it the whole game. And
he did,
That's how you know there's a pitcher on that mound.
Absolutely.
The catcher doesn't know him. The catcher's calling stuff that doesn't go along with what he's been taught and what he knows. And now, after a while, maybe they'll get to know him, and they'll know how to call that game, because I think Castro was back there. He didn't know him from Adam, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure.
Castro was – Garver knows him a little bit, but, you know, Garver hasn't caught him much. So, basically, no one knows him. He's got a head of his own. That's good. Barrios is another kid with the stuff. He did okay last night. He's gotten away
Seemed to me last night his curve, he kind of refound his curveball.
Yeah. I don't know. You know what? I tried to watch that game. I kept getting distracted. Every time I got distracted is when he was pitching, so I didn't see much. But I've been noticing lately in his little bit of a stall, I guess you'd say, he's starting to throw all these two-seamers and not throwing his changeup. And it's not him. He's a he's a live fastball guy that should work the top of the zone more. When he works the top and the bottom, he's untouchable. And he's got a tremendous changeup, hardly used it when he's going bad. So, you know, he's a guy with stuff. So those two guys are going to be at the top of that rotation.
Absolutely.
The tough thing is, what are you going to do? What are you going to do when here's a question.
Right.
You get rid of Lance and you just gave the money to and can't get anybody out. So there's another one. If you watch.
He only went three innings today, and he was up in the 80-pitch count. So.
Oh, well, Lance Lynn is a high fastball pitcher in the past when he's good and works everything off the high fastball, which disguises breaking balls and disguises two-seamer in the righties. And he's trying to pitch downstairs. I watch him. That's not him. So he's out of his game, whether he knows it or not, from what I can see. So, you know, what do? Do you send Romero out? Not me. I keep Romero and make an adjustment somewhere else.
Absolutely. Coach, we got about 90 seconds left. One of the guys I'm really, really excited about is a guy who's at Cedar Rapids right now, Brusdor Graterol. I don't know how familiar you are with him, but he's basically a flamethrower. He threw 101 three times the other night. Do you know what can you tell me about him real quick?
He's got a special arm. Still trying to learn how to pitch. Getting healthy after that Tommy John, and then, you know, I think this is going to be a big year for him to stay healthy and learn how to pitch against a little bit better competition. But yeah, he's got a special arm, good breaking stuff. He's okay. He's okay. And he's got a ways to go, but, you know, you never know when guys got that kind of arm. If they start showing you that they can, what they got between their ears works, then you got a chance.
Sure. Tell me real quick, I wish we had more time, but tell me real quick about your Nubability Athletic Foundation.
Oh, okay. Well, Nubability is an organization that is nobody that I really work for, but I've worked with them. I'm working with a nonprofit called LetKidsBeKids.us. That's where you find it. And I ran into a guy named Chris Rizzola down here in Cape Coral, and he started this. And it's geared to get kids that have differences to play in Little League Baseball, as long as they're cognitive. You know, we had one young kid play with us that had a difference where he's had a nub arm, played. We had a kid with cerebral palsy play with our team one night, and these kids were just having a blast, and the kids accepted them fine, and it was good. So if they we're trying to get the kids in, you know, the Little League associations to let these kids play. You know, there's no
sure.
league for them. It's not like Challenger baseball. That's a little different kind of a thing. And it's tough to convince people because it's so ultra competitive, and it's just not too cool when everybody's supposedly a big league player and this kid's going to be this and that. Just the kids love it when those kids were on our team. It was, and that's good. And that's why it's Let Kids Be Kids. So we're also trying to make an attempt to get the parents and the coaches to let kids play, not try to run everything that they do during a ball game, quit calling every pitch, quit having kids have to look at you every time they need to advance a base, and have the parents, you know, as much as they care, not to yell instructions, but more just encouragement.
And absolutely.
If we can make a difference in that way, it would be great. And I'm hoping we can. So we're doing some stuff, some online learning type things, and just trying to get people to calm down and cool off and let kids be kids and let them have fun.
Absolutely. Coach, we're out of time. I cannot thank you enough for coming on the podcast and giving me a half an hour of your day. It was a blast, and thank you very, very much.
Well, thanks for having me. I just get long-winded. I'm sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Hey, I could talk. I love talking Twins baseball. I could talk Twins baseball all day. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Eric Rasmussen. Thanks, Coach.
Good deal. Thanks for calling, and thanks for having me on.
No problem. Thank you.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, that was Eric Rasmussen. He was a former major league pitcher and a coach in the Twins system. Talked about some of the coaches or some of the players he used to coach, had glowing things to say about Brad Radke and LaTroy Hawkins. Also, some of the current guys. I brought up Bruiser Gratterall. He mentioned Jose Barrios and Fernando Romero. So, baseball lifer there. I've got one more podcast coming up today. It's going to be a short one. It's going to be with Darren Doogie Wolfson from KMSP, Minneapolis, St. Paul. He is going to talk to us about the Twins, what's going on, if they're going to end up trading for a catcher now that Jason Castro's out for the year. And we're going to talk a little bit of Minnesota Timberwolves basketball. So stay tuned for that. Thanks, everybody, and we'll see you down the road in Podcast Land.